It feels like your mind is giving up on you, and you have no control over how you feel, and you feel like you are going absolutely crazy. It's so hard to watch everyone else around you, what seems like to just be having like these amazing lives and, you know, having their lives together and going to school or, you know, figuring out what they want to do, and you're just sitting there watching everybody go by, living life, and you have nothing together, and it just makes you feel really shitty.
Oh man, so how do you get past that? Because you're right. Okay, hi folks, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dr. John Duffy. I'm your host today, and I'm pretty excited because I have a really very special guest sitting across from me right now. At a time when it feels to me like teenage anxiety, depression, and hopelessness and self-loathing is kind of at an all-time high, I have an expert with me who I think she might not know the degree to which she's an expert, but I'm sitting across from somebody who's been through some of this stuff and has great insight into it. Kathleen, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Okay, so let's start off by just share your story with us from like the beginning. You know, you've been through a lot. You are now what, 20?
20 years old.
Okay,
yes.
So take us back to 7th, 8th grade when the arc of your story started to change a little bit.
Okay, yeah. So I was having a lot of issues with my family. I actually went in for testing for schooling, and on the questionnaire there was questions about like how our family was working and everything, and I answered very negatively, and lots of things have changed over the years. I've been through periods of really deep depression, really bad anxiety, having to leave high school, having to do school at home, lots of ups and downs.
Yeah. All right, so take me back to the beginning for a second. So you felt, I forgot about what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, right, so you took this this inventory, and you said some negative things about your family. You were angry in eighth grade.
Yeah.
What was going on in eighth grade?
We just didn't have a good relationship. There was a lot of trust issues, a lot of lying going on. We just didn't have a good relationship. We weren't talking. We weren't honest. And I think that's super important, especially at that age.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I want to point out before we get too deep into this is people can't see you, but they can hear you. When I met you, I remember thinking, this is an angry, depressed, anxious girl, and she seems like the least likely candidate for that. You seemed like you had everything you needed in place. You seemed like you were beautiful and likable and intelligent. What were you so pissed off about?
Well, to be honest, I actually didn't even know I was depressed or anxious. At that time, I'd never even heard of the word anxiety, which right there I think is a huge problem with today's society, that the fact that I was, I don't know, maybe 14, and I didn't know anything about mental health is kind of mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, so why is that important, do you think? Like, why do you want 14-year-olds to know what anxiety is? Like, do you feel like a lot of kids that age suffer from it?
Oh, definitely. I just remember I felt extremely different, and I didn't know what it was. And I didn't have anybody to talk to. I didn't have anybody to relate to. It wasn't really talked about in the media. I didn't know. I thought there was something extremely wrong with me. And I remember I tried telling my mom plenty of times, and I would get so scared that I wouldn't be able to say it. I would start off the conversation, and she would ask me, "Is everything okay?" And I would just answer, "Yeah, it's fine." And then one day I just started crying, and I said, "I think something's really wrong. Like, I don't feel like myself at all. I'm not okay."
And not having a word for that and not knowing that anybody
else...
It's
hard, yeah. It's really confusing. It's scary. It's a problem.
And you felt alone, huh? You felt like, hey, I'm the only one.
Definitely. That was like one of the biggest problems, is I felt so alone. There was it was just not talked about. And I think it's getting better as the year's gone on. Like, but I think there's still a lot of improvement that needs to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think if you were 14 now, you know, with access to Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and
that's
stuff.
That's helpful. As much as people think social media isn't helpful, that helped me a lot. Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, seeing just the way people would describe the way they're feeling and put it into words that is exactly how I'm feeling helped me immensely. It made me feel like there's somebody out there that is going through exactly what I'm going through. I may not know them. I may not ever meet them, but just knowing that I'm not doing this alone helps so, so, so incredibly much.
So there's people in my field and my generation that would say, ooh, that sounds scary to me. I don't like that because maybe it's suggesting anxiety or depression to people who aren't suffering from it.
Yeah, like maybe they'll think, well, one, it can be triggering. Maybe they'll think they have issues they don't really have. And I think there's negatives and positives to everything in life, no matter how you look at it. But to me, I think the positives outweigh it so, so much more.
Sounds like by a lot. Like yeah. Was that kind of a saving grace to you? Was social media kind of like finally somebody understands?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It helped me a lot. It made me not only feel not so alone, it made me want to talk about it. It made me want to be a voice for other people that may be younger or going through something and feel more comfortable about it and know that it's okay to talk about it. You're not alone. There's other people just like you going through it.
Right.
And it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what a powerful shift in a few years, right?
I mean, yeah, definitely.
And the last part, it's going to be okay. Like, that's the part I always want kids to know that I think they don't. I don't know if everybody gets there. Like, do you feel like they do, and do you feel like you're there?
Well, okay. The thing is when you're in a place where you're really depressed or really anxious or whatever you're going through, and you hear someone tell you it's going to be okay, you're just kind of like, that's BS. Like, I don't believe anything you're saying. Like, you don't know what I'm going through. Obviously, because that's never going to happen. And I've been in places recently, too, where I just thought, it's never going to get better. I don't care what anybody says. I know for me, it's never going to get better. And I think it's just something you really have to come to a realization to on your own. And it may take time, but it does happen eventually. And something that I've learned, too, to kind of accept is that if you suffer, I mean, I guess it depends on the person too, but for me, like suffering with anxiety and depression is something I'm going to have to deal with my whole life. And it's not something that, you know, just goes away. You don't go to treatment, you don't get meds, and it doesn't just go away. You're not automatically better. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand is they think, you know, like they'll go to rehab, they get a new prescription, and you're cured. Your depression's gone. Your anxiety's gone. And that's not how it works. It's something that people have to deal with on a daily basis. And some days are good. Some days are bad. But it's something you have to live with.
And is there some solace in that? Like, you know, so I can tell you feel like, well, yeah, telling people there's this cure-all is snake oil. That's a lie, right?
Well, I mean, this is just my opinion, and that's how I feel.
Right.
I mean, some people may go through different periods of like something happens and they get depressed and then it gets better. But for some people, like for me, it wasn't that something, you know, serious happened and it made me depressed and sad. It was just, I was sad for no reason and it wouldn't go away. And so it depends on the person.
So take me back to that. So eighth grade, freshman year, sophomore year, I'm sad for no reason. Is that how it was? I mean, there wasn't anything going on socially, academically, at home that was driving this? Do you feel like this was just organic in you?
Yeah, there wasn't anything driving it. I mean, yeah, I had issues with friends. I had issues with grades in school and the pressures of high school and then colleges. And I think that adds to it. But it definitely, I just remember I didn't feel like myself. I just felt very different. I didn't feel as happy as I used to be. I wasn't laughing. Like, I couldn't remember the last time I laughed. I just knew there was something wrong.
Yeah. I was saying earlier, like, you seem like this unlikely candidate. You seem like the kind of person that a parent would say, come on, just snap out of it. Just do better in school and plug into it, you know, and quit feeling this way. You know, like, I can imagine that your parents were probably frustrated with you over the years because it doesn't seem like you're lacking anything.
Right. And I think that's something that is a really big issue with the mental health community in general. But I do understand where people are coming from when they do say, you know, snap out of it. Like, you're lazy. You're just, you know, just it'll be fine. Like, go outside, hang out with your friends. It'll go away. And I get where they're coming from because I was at a point where I kind of thought the same thing about myself. But wait, I lost my thought.
That's okay. At the worst of it, you know, the worst time, did you have a way out? Like, how did you figure your way into a better state of mind?
It took a lot of time, a lot of years. I would say right now is the best I've probably been in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of ups and downs. There were times where I was really depressed, and then I would slowly get out of it. I would start drinking, you know, get into drugs, and it just made things worse. And it kind of took me a while to realize that, even after plenty of people told me, you know, you have a problem, you have this. And it didn't really hit me until I kind of had to realize on my own, like, I need to step back. I need to, you know, reevaluate my life and what I want it to be.
And what was the moment or the event that made you finally take that step back and evaluate, like, maybe I have some agency over this. Maybe there's some way I can think differently or do something differently.
You know, nothing extreme happened. It was just I was sitting on the couch and I kind of thought, you know, I don't want my life to be like this anymore. I want to feel happy again. I want to be okay. And I feel like happy isn't even the right word. I want to say maybe content, because I don't think everybody's happy all the time. That's not really realistic. But I just want to feel content. I want to be able to enjoy things. I want to be able to go out with my friends and not feel uncomfortable. I want to be okay in my own skin. And I have the power to do that. So I'm going to try to make a change.
What was different about that day? So, you know, like, you're describing these years that go by where you're anxious and depressed and, you know, kind of unhappy. You know, why didn't that day come 5 years earlier?
I honestly don't know. I think what helped me, though, was just support from friends. And not just that, but also talking about the really dark stuff that I was going through out loud. And not even just to, like, you, my therapist, or to my family or friends, but sometimes I would just do that by myself. And that helps a lot because you kind of realize, you know what, I don't want to feel this way anymore. I don't want to keep doing this. And a big thing for me was this year when the new year came around, and that caused a very, very severe depression for me just because I thought I can't do this for another year. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was at home for like 2 months, not leaving my house, and it was horrible. My anxiety was kind of gone, which was a huge, huge relief. My parents didn't really know what to do. It was rough, but things changed, and it's scary because it scares me, you know, like, well, what if that'll happen again? And, you know, maybe it will, but that's the thing, is like, you don't really have complete control over this type of illness. It's just, you have to take it day by day, and you do what you can do and just try to look at it in a positive way.
So I like that. I like the positivity of that message. And I like this idea that, right, we don't have full control over it, but there can be this day, this moment where you decide, all right, I don't want to live this way anymore. Something's going to be different, right? Is it that simple? Is it as easy as, I'm going to make a decision here? You know, I'm tired of living this way. It's a new year. I want it to be different. And so it will.
I want to say yes, but I don't think it is, because there's been hundreds of times where I've been at the point where I thought, it won't get better. Like, I was at the complete opposite end that I am right now. And, you know, talking to friends that am where I am too, and they're in the same place. And I just thought, I guess this is what my life is going to be like. And I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, this is horrible. I really think it depends on the person and the people that they're surrounded by and, you know, the access that they have to certain things. But I don't know, nothing like, you know, extreme happened that, you know, I wish I could say there was something that happened that, you know, changed, because that would be a really nice story that,
right.
You know, but I don't, it just kind of clicked one day.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you trust it? In other words, do you feel like, oh yeah, this is going to have legs, like, you know, 6 months, a year from now, the same juice, I'm going to have it?
No, I'm still, it's so fresh still that it's scary to me to just go all in and think, okay, you know, I'm okay now. Cause I mean, like I said before, that's not what it's like. There's going to be days, like this past week, I've had days where I, you know, didn't feel like leaving my house. I didn't want to. And sometimes you just got to push yourself and say, you know what, you want to be better. I want to change for myself.
Yeah. 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 What's a day like where you don't want to leave the house?
It's rough. It depends too. I mean, some days it's like, you know, I'm crying and I'm upset and emotional. Some days I'm emotionless and I don't feel anything and I don't want to talk to anybody. I just sit there and watch TV, and it's kind of a way for me to, an outlet of not feeling anything and just kind of being okay and not really even being aware of my surroundings, and then just going to bed. It's kind of like wanting to just go to sleep. And
so it sounds so depressing. And yet, if I heard you right a moment ago, it's not really that it's kind of like nothingness almost, right? Is it a void?
Well, yeah, because there was a period last year where I went through a really bad period of anxiety, and that it was like the worst experience of my entire life. And that's where I learned that there's definitely different levels of anxiety. And it was like, I couldn't function in the slightest. And just having that be gone was such a relief to me, that I was just so okay with not doing anything. And that also can be perceived as, like, you know, being lazy, not doing anything. And that's kind of how my parents took it, which was frustrating for my end, because I was like, that's not what's going on right now. It's not like that. You know, I wish I wasn't sitting in front of the TV all day and doing nothing. I wish I could be like my friends that are going to school and having a job and, you know, going out and being happy and more content and just, you know, living my life. But I'm not at a place where I can do that right now, or I could ever see myself doing that. And that was also really scary to me. I think that's one of the hardest things too for people that are going through this at this age, just because it's so hard to watch everyone else around you, what seems like to just be having like these amazing lives and, you know, having their lives together and going to school or, you know, figuring out what they want to do. And you're just sitting there watching everybody go by, living life, and you have nothing together, and it just makes you feel really shitty.
Because you're right. Like, so many people your age, even your brother, right? I mean,
yeah.
You've got this rock star brother who...
Yeah, it's hard, and I'm obviously happy for him, but it's... What you have to realize is, and this took me a while too, and there's definitely days where I think, oh my God, I'm such a loser. Like, what is wrong with me? But you kind of have to just realize that everybody goes through things at different periods of their life, and you'll get there someday, and just focus on yourself. You just can't listen to what other people say.
Yeah.
And that's definitely really hard. It was way harder in the beginning. Yeah, you just kind of have to do it on your own pace.
Yeah. For either kids who are suffering from it or parents who just don't understand it, can you describe what anxiety is like? Because I think you're right. I think what looks like lazy is usually or always something else. And anxiety tends to be at the top of that list when I talk to kids. What's it like? What does it feel like when you're in the midst of it?
Well, there's definitely different types. I mean, for me, it was socially. Like, I couldn't be around big groups of people. And I remember I was so embarrassed to explain that like to my friends because they were so confused. They were like, why aren't you going out? Like, you don't like us anymore? Like, what's going on? And it's hard. You lose relationships. It takes a toll on your whole life, and you start to feel like it controls everything about you and it defines you.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to let go. But it feels like your mind is giving up on you and you have no control over how you feel, and you feel like you are going absolutely crazy. And there's not even a good way to describe it. I feel like it's something you just feel. And I think that's one of the hardest things for people that don't go through it to understand, is I really feel like you can't understand it unless you go through it. And in a way, ignorance is bliss. I hope you don't have to understand it.
Mm, yeah.
Because it's not fun.
The idea that anxiety is your mind giving up on you, or that's what it feels like. You know, I've experienced anxiety myself. I've worked with a lot of people who have. That feels accurate to me. Like, you know,
yeah.
And it can be paralyzing, right? It can take you completely out of your life.
Well, yeah, because it's like I remember when it first hit me, I just thought my life is over. I was so embarrassed. I didn't want anybody to know. And it's crazy how things have changed over time and how I've just become so much more open with it. And I would really suggest for people that are going through it to just not be embarrassed by it and just talk about it and say, you know, here, this is what's going on. It's not, because it's so stigmatized, and I think it's kind of our job to kind of fix that.
Yeah.
And say, you know what, this is a real thing. This is a real disease. Talk about it. Change it. You know, things got to change.
This is something I love about you, Kathleen, specifically you, because you seem to have, when you've got some energy and when you're feeling better, you seem to have this mission that's very much like that. Like, you know what, let's come out of the shadows and let's talk about this, and maybe people suffer less. Do you think there's strength in numbers like that?
Oh, totally. I definitely think, well, because it makes you, one, not feel so alone. You just kind of think, you know, there's other people going through this. And it helps, I think, for people that aren't going through it to maybe understand it a little better.
Right.
You know, before it's too late. It's like, let's get people talking about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so what's the best way to do that?
I think people that are struggling with it to talk about it. I think explaining what they're going through. And I know that's really hard. I know that's not an easy thing to do.
It's a lot to ask of somebody who's anxious in real time.
Yeah, and right? I mean, eventually, you don't have to do it right away. I'm not saying, you know, the day you feel depressed, hey, everybody, I'm depressed, look at me. And some people also take it the wrong way. They think, oh, people are doing this for attention. They want people to pity them. They want people to say, you know, it's okay, and so they get all this attention. And, you know, maybe some people are doing it for that reason, but the reality is it's very, very real. And I don't know the best way to get people talking about it. I think people, for me, I think it's just talking about it in a more casual way.
Yeah.
And just saying, hey, you know, I mean, for me, like going to therapy, I just talk about that like it's a normal thing. Like, I'm like, oh, I have therapy today. Not a big deal. Like, I just try to make it like it's not a big deal, because I remember at first I was humiliated. I was like, I have to go to a therapist. Like, I'm never telling anybody about this.
Right.
And the more normal, eventually over time, I think there'll be a big difference. It's just going to take time, like anything else.
And just destigmatizing it will work wonders, huh?
Definitely.
All right. So one thing I noticed just listening to us talk here is it seems to me that you and I are both using the words anxiety and depression interchangeably. And I think there's some validity to that, but I'm kind of curious to hear what you think, because I rarely work with, especially a teenager who is just anxious or just depressed. They seem to run together. What do you think?
I think they definitely run together. What I've learned over the years is that, especially more recently, is my anxiety will get extremely bad, or my depression will get extremely bad. and it kind of cancels out one another. Like, mm-hmm. if my anxiety is really bad, there won't be any depression. If my depression is really bad, there won't be any anxiety.
Got it. Right.
But for most of my life, they've been pretty much there together.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what it's like for everybody else, but from people that I've met in my life, they've definitely been there together.
How universal do you think they are? In other words, do you think everybody suffers this stuff to some degree?
Oh, definitely. I think everybody has some form of mental health issue at some degree and at some point in their life. Like, everybody's going to go through something. And that's why it's so, so important to talk about it. But I think that's also something that people can use in their defense. Like, well, everybody's going through something. What people don't understand is, like, depression. It's a difference than being just sad. It's not just being upset about something. It's being depressed. It's a whole different emotion. And it's not something to be taking lightly.
Yeah. And you're right. There's a distinction and a critical one between just sadness, like this kind of momentary state of mind. Like,
definitely.
You know, oh, I lost my dog. I'm feel sad about yeah. that, right? As best you can. Can you describe depression? That's a big question, but what does it feel like?
I feel like there's so many good Tumblr posts that I've seen and I've, like, repinned. Something that I remember reading, and I hope I say this right, is it's like you're drowning and you watch everybody else swim by you. And I think that's exactly what it feels like. You're sitting there watching as everybody continues on with their life, and you are sitting there not able to function, not able to do anything. Again, like, your mind's giving up on you, and just feeling like this whole different person. Like, you don't, it's so hard to describe, but it's literally like you don't feel like yourself. There's times where you do feel sad, but it's mostly, for me, there was no emotion there. Like, I felt so cold, so negative, so dark inside. I felt so hopeless. And I think that was the hardest thing, is not having hope, because that there you lose motivation. You don't want to get out of bed in the morning. It really takes a toll on yeah. on everything in your life.
It's wild to hear you talk about it, because I can sense that it doesn't draw emotion per se. Like, you know, like I would think, oh, some people are going to talk about their depression and that's going to be upsetting to them. And you're able to talk about it in this very kind of clinical way. Do you think that's unique to you? Or do you think, like, I bet a lot of people can talk about their depression this way?
You know, I don't know. I think from people that I've met, they're able to talk about it in a very open way. They don't get upset about it. They're able to talk about it. And I mean, I don't know. I think it's different for everybody, and it depends on what you're going through with your yeah. depression, because everybody's depression is different. I think it depends on the person.
Right.
But, yeah.
So a couple times you described this feeling that, you know, like, a lot of this feeling, depression and anxiety, is people kind of passing you by. Do you feel behind? Do you feel like you have to catch up to somebody?
Oh, yeah. It's like, I feel so behind, like, in the sense that, what do you mean? Like, in the sense that everybody is, like, going on with their lives, like, you feel behind, like, I have so much catching up to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
right.
Definitely. I mean, for me, I'm 20 years old. My friends are going to be graduating next year, and I haven't even started college. I mean, I have, but I never finished it. It's like, if I wanted to, I'd have to, you know, go from the beginning freshman year. That's really hard on me. I have to see all my friends graduate next year, and I haven't even had started school. That's incredibly hard. And I think it's important to talk about that with people. Like, I have a really great support system. My friends understand where I'm at, and they know, and they tell me, you know what, it's okay. Like, everybody has to figure their stuff out. You'll get there eventually. You got to do you. And I think that's really important for people to understand, is self-care is so, so, so incredibly important. And it's important to be selfish at times. You need to take care of yourself. You need to put yourself first, because your body is telling you something and you got to listen to it. And it carries a lot of value with it.
Yeah, that is a brilliant point, right? You're when you're anxious or depressed, that is your body screaming that I need some attention. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so when your friends are moving along, and I get that your friends understand, and I get the power of kind of coming out to them and letting them know, like, this is my deal, you know, and I can tell that that works for you. I've worked with a lot of kids who are reluctant to do that because it's just like, I don't want to seem like I'm behind. I don't want their pity in any way. Do you ever feel that way?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely tell them, like, look, I don't want your pity. I don't want you to feel sorry for me. Cause that doesn't make you feel good. That doesn't help. It kind of makes it worse. It's like, it makes you kind of feel like this loser that needs help and, you know, but I don't like that. But, no, I definitely think you gotta be honest and just really kind of explain where you're coming from, but be careful who you choose to share things with. I mean, I think you gotta understand the people you're talking to. I mean, I'm not saying go voice out to the whole world, these are my problems, listen to it, because that's not a healthy thing to do either. That'll backfire in negative ways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So how do you pick your safe people? How do you know, like, okay, this is a girl or a guy I can trust?
I mean, I think you got to be a good judge of character. I try to surround myself with people that are positive and going to, you know, push me in positive ways. And I try to get the people that aren't going to do that for me and aren't looking out for my best interest kind of out of my life. Especially at times where I'm going through things, I don't need that kind of negativity. It's not going to help me in any way. I need people that are going to be there for me and support me.
Right. Kathleen, for you, where does self-esteem play into all of this?
Oh, self-esteem is, for me personally, is one of the biggest things that carries with my anxiety and depression. That's been a struggle for me since like the beginning of when everything started.
What do you think the main factors are that play into self-esteem for you?
Well, for me in high school, I was teased a lot for being stupid and dumb, and people made fun of me, and that took a toll on me because words carry value. And eventually I truly believed that I was stupid. And I remember thinking, I'm never getting into college. I'm not going to be capable of anything in my life. And I didn't talk to anybody. I think my mic is out.
No, I can hear it.
Oh, okay.
You're good. It might be this cord that gets a little iffy.
I remember coming home from school and going in my bathroom and just bawling my eyes out. And I, at the time, wasn't talking to anybody about it. I wasn't talking to my parents. I wasn't talking to my friends. I wasn't telling them how it made me feel. And it really took a toll on me. And it took me a while to gain the confidence back to think, you know what, I am smart. I am capable of things. I am intelligent. What people say, I shouldn't let it affect me. But, you know, it's hard because things do affect you. It's not easy to hear negative things being said to you over that long of a time and not let it have an effect on you. It does.
Was it as broad as I, you know, the word stupid is so potent to me. You know, I'm thinking, like, did somebody really say you were stupid? Like, you know, is that something that actually happened?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It wasn't a thing where I was, you know, like, pointed at and teased and like sat alone at a table like, oh my god, that girl's so stupid. It was kind of like I went along with it, so it was partly on me because I didn't say, hey, stop. It was I went along with it. I thought, you know what, like I guess I'm the joke, like whatever, I'll go along with it, like haha, like yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could do anything, I would definitely have changed the way, you know,
you responded.
Yeah
man, that is kind of a heartbreaking story. Must have been just wretched for you, that alone, you know, like thinking, like, not only does everybody think I'm stupid, but I'm gonna play along and I'm a joke, and you know, like,
well, yeah, it was hard. It affected how I performed in school. I was so terrified, and I still am, to, you know, raise my hand in classes because I'm so scared that what I'm going to say, people are going to judge. They're going to think I'm stupid. They're going to think, what the hell is that girl talking about? You know, and it was really hard. It's high school's hard for everybody. Everybody suffers from different things, confidence wise, whatever. That was just one part of it, but that was definitely hard. I don't think I realized how much of an effect it had on me till later in my life, and mm-hmm. how kind of serious it kind of the toll it took on me was until later.
It feels enormous. Also, like talking to you, it feels so obviously not true. But was it that as soon as you kind of adopted that position, was that no longer obvious to you?
What do you mean?
That you were stupid. I mean, right now I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, well, you're clearly like very intelligent, and very insightful. Did you lose sight of that? Did you never really know that?
No, I mean, I remember that was something that I believed so true to be true. Like, I sincerely thought that I was stupid, and I thought something like might be wrong with me. I'm stupid. People would tease me and say, your dad had to pay for you to get into this high school. There were so many different things. And I believed everything everybody said. I didn't have enough confidence in myself to say, look, like, don't talk to me like that. Listen to how that makes me feel. Or like, shut up. Like, don't treat me that way. It took a huge toll on my confidence for sure.
Yeah. And then years later, you did some high school, you did it online, right?
Yeah.
And didn't you ace every single class you took?
Yeah, it was different because I was, like I said, I wasn't with a huge group of people. I was able to focus on what I was supposed to focus on, school. There wasn't other distractions. I mean, I guess it's not that realistic of a way to do things.
Right.
But for some people it works, and for me it helped so much. I was able to focus on school and only school. And almost too much, to the point where I, stopped kind of hanging out with my friends. But it kept me busy, gave me something to do. I guess it helped with my confidence because I kind of realized, people learn differently. I think the high school I chose to go to, Bennett's a great school. I mean, it's not for everybody. It definitely wasn't the right pick for me. I did not pick it for the right reasons. And you got to just keep in mind people learn in different kind of ways. And yeah, for me, it was definitely online school that helped.
Yeah. That choice of high school, just to take a little aside here, is such a big deal for so many parents and so many kids.
A huge deal.
Yeah. So how do you, given that this wasn't the right choice for you, what do you think was wrong with it? Like, what would you have done differently? And how do you think people should look at that decision?
Well, for me, I picked it for friends. I thought, friends were telling me, you should come here, you should come there. And I was like, everybody's going there. I want to go there. I wasn't thinking whatsoever in the sense of, where I'm going to learn best.
Right.
And I was also listening to, what parents are saying, whatever, but also saying, colleges are going to look at this and blah, blah, blah. It's like, I'm in eighth grade. Like, come on, you don't need to be thinking about colleges in eighth grade. I think that's a huge problem, especially where we live, is the pressure for kids in colleges. It's so ridiculous. And when you look at the big picture of life, that is such a tiny speck of what you're going to accomplish and what you're going to do and the issues you're going to have to deal with. Like, that is not going to matter to you in however many years. And I promise you that, because I'm at the place now where that doesn't bother me. And I remember when I was at the place where I thought that was my entire life, and my entire life had added up to this point, and that's all that mattered was where I was going to go to college, what college I was going to dig into, ACT scores. It was like the amount of pressure that was put on all of us is so ridiculous. It's crazy.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it's something that starts, if we're being honest, when kids are really young.
Really,
right?
Young. Really young. And I think it's a big thing about where we live, too. I don't think that's how it is everywhere. I think, honestly, it's a big part of where we live.
Right. So we're taping in the western suburbs of Chicago. It's a fairly well-to-do area, right? Right. I would guess somewhere in the city it might be different, but there's a lot of pressure on kids to pick schools no matter where they are.
Right. And I think people have like the best interest of their kids in heart. I mean, they want their kids to be successful in life. Then they think, success equals going to a good school. Therefore, you get a good job and you're set for life. When in reality, they should be thinking, let's think about my kids' happiness. Let's try to make sure they're healthy emotionally. They're healthy mentally. and not having college or whatever be the number one priority. And I'm not saying college is a bad idea and don't go to college. I mean, if it works for you, do it. Go for it. But that's not the only option you have. There's so many things you can do that can make you happy in life, and that's not like the only answer.
So how does that play in your world specifically? Because I think that was beautifully put, right? And not everybody has to go to college. And maybe if I can add something to that, you know, heading for that top tier college, like the very, very best college I could possibly get into. I'm going to sweat my way through high school. I'm going to take the ACT 9 times to perfect my score. And then what, be miserable in college for 4 years because I barely made it into this place. I think you're saying, well, look for something that fits you and suits you and makes you happy.
I mean, yeah, for me, it took me a while to kind of, and I'm still kind of figuring out, like, I went to University of Kentucky, and I went in undecided. I went to college for the completely wrong reasons, not just because I thought, oh, this will be fun, I'm going to party. I went because that's what everybody else was doing. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I just went because that's what I thought I was supposed to be doing. And I realized after the first semester, I don't want to be here because I don't know what I want to do with my life. I need to figure my things out first. And I'm only, at the time I was, what, only 18, 19? Like,
yep.
I feel like we're pushing kids at such a young age when, especially at the time when you're kind of figuring out who you want to be, you need to figure that out first before you know what you want to do. I mean, you're changing constantly. Your priorities are changing, especially at that age. Like, every day you're changing, and it's taken me a while to kind of realize what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
But it'll happen eventually.
So you have comfort and confidence in that. You trust the process of maturing. How you feel like, yeah, I'm going to figure this out. I'm not worried about it. And I think too many people my age are just fretting daily about what they're going to do with the rest of their lives, as if they know when they're 20 years old.
Well, yeah, and I get that because there's still days where I freak out about that. I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And then I have to kind of sit back and realize I'm only 20 years old. Like, you have your whole life to figure this out. What I just didn't want to happen was, you know, go to school, pick some major that I didn't really care about, end up majoring in it, getting a job, and being miserable. I mean, that's not ideal. Like, I want to be happy in life. I don't really care what I'm doing as long as it makes me happy.
Right.
And that's probably just a big priority of mine just because of the things I've gone through in the past and suffering from depression and anxiety is just having that be such a big priority in my life. And it's crazy because I remember thinking when I was younger, like, there was not a doubt in my mind I was going to go to college. Like, that's all I thought. Like, everybody does that. I didn't think
Absolutely. People
didn't do that.
Right.
And it's crazy how things change when you grow up and how your perspective on life changes and how you view people and things. And it's kind of a really cool process to go through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So with that in mind, like, when you think about your future,
yeah.
do you have vision for it? Do you feel like, okay, I think I kind of know where I'm headed now?
I mean, recently, yeah, I've been thinking about, you know, doing things with animals because they make me happy. I'm trying to, like, think of things that I would genuinely be happy doing. Like, I've talked to you about vet tech school, and that really interests me, and I think that's what I'm going to start pursuing. I'm still trying to, like, you know, get my stuff together before I go straight head into that because I don't want to start something that I can't commit to. But, yeah, I mean, I try not to think too far ahead in the future because for me that just stresses me out. But I think sometimes you just know that everything's going to be okay. You get this feeling like, and I don't know what it's from. I don't know, but it's just kind of like this satisfying feeling that it's all going to be okay in the end. Like, everything will work itself out like it's supposed to. You'll get where you need to be. And yeah.
So you trust this process, even though you said a little while ago, like, I know anxiety and depression well enough to know they ebb and flow. They're going to come back.
Oh, for sure. There's going to be, and it's scary to me, but knowing that I can get through some of the hardest times in my life, I know that I'll be able to get through them. And it's the hardest thing is those days when you're going through those periods, because all you're thinking is this is never going to go away. Like, I'm never going to be okay again.
Right.
And it's really hard, but it definitely, it gets better. It definitely does.
All right. So let me ask you a couple of things just in closing here. If in I have this fantasy in my mind that you address an assembly of high school kids. So let's say, you know, you're standing on the floor of a gym in high school, right? Okay. and you know that there are some depressed and anxious kids out there. What would you want them to hear?
Definitely that they're not alone, and that they're never going to be alone, and that there's always somebody you can talk to. You can talk to me. I don't care if you don't know me. I am open to talking and just kind of explaining, I guess, my story and what depression and anxiety has been like for me in my journey, just so maybe if even one person can relate to it, it'll help them in some kind of way. I think a really big thing too is parents talking to their kids about mental health, and just because I've met friends that, you know, have parents that, you know, don't believe in it, don't. And to me, I remember thinking, oh my God, that is so crazy to me. And I guess it's a generation thing. I think this generation is a lot more open to it, and it's a lot less stigmatized than
your generation,
for sure.
Versus mine, right.
And I think it's so, so important to start talking to your kids at a young age about emotional health and mental health and how important it is. Because like I said before, I didn't even know what depression or anxiety was. I never heard of the word anxiety until I met someone that was suffering from it. And I asked them, what is that? And I can't believe it has such a big part of my life now. But yeah, I would definitely suggest parents and family talking about it and just being open about it and not being so hush-hush about it, you know, just really being open. I think talking about how you feel is so, so important, especially in family dynamic. And that was something that I don't think my family was doing all the time, and that was what was affecting us in such a negative way. And now it's done a 360. We are so open about how we feel, and it may be really annoying at times, but it's helped our relationship so, so much. My mom is my best friend now, and I never thought I would say that ever in a thousand years.
So first of all, I love that. In my family, I remember when I was growing up, I had this panic attack in this restaurant. When I talk to audiences, I tell people about this, and my mother says, "We'll leave, but we're never talking about this again."
My God.
Yeah, so that was the vibe, you know? Did the Riley family have that kind of vibe at times? Even unwittingly, you know?
No, it wasn't we don't talk about that at all. I would say my mom was a lot more open about her emotions and stuff. It was just, I wasn't aware of mental health or anything like that. That was something we didn't talk about. And I think it's because I don't think my parents realized how important it would be in my life and how much of an impact it would have in my life. But when you have it also in your family and generations, I mean, that's something to talk about. It's a serious deal.
That's such a good point, actually. You know, there's certain talks that kind of traditionally parents know they have to have and kind of dread. The drug talk, the drinking talk, the sex talk. The mental health talk is not one of those, you know? And you make a good point. You feel if we talked about this in families, if we were open about this and we talked about the history of it in our families, that would make a difference.
Totally. And I feel like I'm not saying sit down and have a talk and be here. I feel like that's not a good way to go about it. I feel like if you do it in a more casual way, and especially with the drug and drinking thing, because if you sit there, especially because I just remember my parents being so incredibly strict with drugs and alcohol, and I think that had a negative impact, and it just made me want to rebel and do drugs and do alcohol, because it was something that I wasn't allowed to be doing. It was something that, you know, was so frowned upon. But if you have an honest relationship and you just say, hey, mom, how I do now, hey, mom, yeah, I drank, or I've done, my mom knows every drug that I've done, which is right. Kind of a very what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, certainly not ordinary.
Yeah,
right?
Not an ordinary relationship, but it's definitely helped our relationship. And I think that goes the same way with talking about mental and emotional well-being. just make it something that's not such a big deal to talk about. Just make it a very normal thing. Like, hey, how are you doing? Like, great. Especially when you address like how you're feeling, just address how you're feeling. Like when you're, if you're in a fight, if you want to get your point across, you know, it really changes the dynamic so much. And I remember the first time I heard it, I thought it was the stupidest thing and the dumbest thing. And I thought, I am never, ever going to talk like that. But it really makes a difference. And I like promise you that.
Oh, that is great advice. Although I got to tell you, like, so, and I mean it, great advice. But right now, parents listening, as we talk about drugs and alcohol, their pulses are quickening and they're thinking like, oh, good God, like, and she did drugs and alcohol and she got you. How do we, you know, what can we say and what can we do to make this not happen?
I feel like you got to just be honest about how it makes you feel. Like when my mom eventually, instead of just coming at me and saying, you can't do this, you can't do that. And she kind of sat down and I saw how upset it made her. And she kind of explained, look, we have alcoholism in our family. Like this is how serious it can be. And, you know, she started tearing up and she like explained to me how it really made her feel. That had a way bigger impact on me than just saying, don't do this, don't do that. And look, kids are going to experiment. Like that's most likely going to happen. And I can't imagine as a parent, like that's really scary to me. Like if I was a parent, that would terrify me. But, trusting your kids, I think, is the biggest thing. Like when my parents would tell me, you know, go have fun tonight, like I trust you, that would make me not want to go out and drink and do drugs or disobey what they had to say. When they would, you know, accuse me or say things before I left that would, you know, be kind of like, don't do it, don't do this, it would
lecturing, yeah,
exactly, yeah. It was kind of like almost like they were talking down to me and they didn't have faith in me enough. So I assumed, you know, if they don't have faith in me, then why not do it? Like,
right.
Whatever.
Right. Brilliant. First of all, still a lot of people in my generation
are going to freak out.
We're going to freak out. And people let parents think like, if I say it one more time, you know, like you are not allowed to go out. You cannot, we're going to drug test you when you get home, or I'm going to smell your breath when you get home, you know?
Oh no. My parents had a breathalyzer. They would breathalyze me when I came home, even when I was sober, like all the time. They were extremely strict. I think having an open conversation about, okay, personally, I think like you should talk to your kids about drugs and it kind of explain, instead of just saying all drugs are bad, don't do drugs, explain the difference. But there's a difference between smoking weed and doing heroin. And that needs to be addressed, because if you just tell your kids don't do drugs, they might do all the drugs. Like you got to kind of explain. I don't want to be like, go smoke weed, it's okay. But there's a huge difference between your kids smoking weed and the other severe drugs that they could be doing. And it's really not that big of a deal, in my opinion.
No, and your opinion counts. Listen, your point is huge for parents. And I'm so glad you're saying it, because way too often parents think the lecture's going to work when an open discussion, actually talking about it, talking about the difference between smoking weed and doing heroin, right? Instead of just like, it's all drugs, so it's a non-starter, we're not going to talk about it. You know, that leaves kids kind of like in the lurch, right?
Definitely. And I guess kind of say, I mean, and I'm not a parent, so I'm not the best person to like give advice, but I think instead of being angry at your kids for, you know, experimenting with that, like I think just kind of tell them to be open with you and kind of get that relationship of honesty started at a very early age. And I think that'll really have a big, strong effect on what they do and what they don't do, and how it'll be a lot more comfortable when they tell you, hey, you know what, like I smoked a joint tonight, like, and you don't have to, I really don't think it'll be as horrible as people think it'll be.
So, you know, one thing I end up telling parents all the time is, hey, you got to put your fear aside, because this generation of kids, fear doesn't drive them. So be open with them. And effectively, I think that's what you're saying is like, you know, I know you're anxious as parents, but that's not helping. An open discussion,
yeah,
that's going to work. That's
even
if your kid smokes a joint tonight, that's still better to talk about it than to not, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, for sure.
Yeah. And I like the distinction. It's an important one between smoking a joint and doing heroin. Like, it's no small thing.
I feel like for a long time, I mean, my parents too, it was just don't do drugs, don't do alcohol, or don't drink alcohol. And you get this idea in your head that, you know, it's psychological. I don't know what it is, but it definitely, there's a big difference in between saying just don't do drugs and don't. I mean, you got to kind of explain the severity of, like, what drugs will do. Like, be open about it. Say, this is the seriousness of this drug, and this is what will happen if you do that. And I know that probably makes a lot of parents uncomfortable, not only because it's kind of saying, here's all this information about drugs. You want to go do them? And that's not the case. It's not. Right. It's just having an open form of honesty is really important.
Is it just about drugs, or are there other things that you feel like, oh yeah, you got to be open about this too?
Like what? Like with drinking or like anything?
Drinking, grades, sex.
I think honesty is always the best policy. I think being open about all that stuff is so important. And it's uncomfortable at first. It's really uncomfortable. Especially, I think, explaining how you feel, like, emotionally. Like, it's not easy to be like, this is how I feel. Like I'm open to judge me on my feelings. Like, it's not always the most comfortable thing. But what I've learned from explaining how I feel and where I'm coming from is it only helps you grow as a person. And I think if you explain that to your kids at a young age, it'll have such a great effect on them later in life.
Right, right. All right, so let me ask you finally, like, you know, what do you picture your future looking like going forward, as best you can describe it?
Hopefully continue on the path that I'm on right now. I think there's still going to definitely be, you know, I'm going to have bad days and good days, but hopefully end up going to school for being either a vet tech or something that has to do with animals, hopefully soon. And eventually, I think that takes like 2 years, eventually graduate from that, you know, get a job, continue focusing on my, I think it's important to always focus on your emotional and mental health and mm-hmm. keep that as like a number one priority. I mean, that's like my number one priority for me. And just, you know, continue to stay aware and try to be as healthy as I can. And yeah, hopefully everything works out.
You know, I think that point about like your emotional health being the number one priority, that should be true for everyone, don't you think?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. For sure. I think it's something that a lot of people fail to realize is so, so important to part of your health. And it makes a huge difference when you focus on it.
Yeah, we blow ourselves off too easily, don't we? Like,
definitely.
Way too much of the time. You said happiness is not, doesn't feel like a legitimate state of being, you know, to strive for. But contentment.
Yeah, that's actually something my dad told me once. And I usually don't agree with his points. but I think that was a really good point he made. Because it's not realistic to, you know, be happy all the time. It's more realistic that you're going to be content.
Can you picture a content life for you?
Right now, yes, I can say that. I hope it stays that way.
I do too. Listen, I cannot thank you enough for spending this hour with me and with anybody who's listening. I wish that I had the insight at 20 years old that you have. It is an enormous gift that I admire in you. And I've said this to you a couple times when it was just the two of us talking, but I'll say it in a more public forum here. I think you're an important voice, a really important voice in this whole area of mental illness and mental health. And I am kind of really grateful to be talking to you and glad to be a part of the early part of you finally speaking out in a more public way.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Thanks
for
being here.
This was awesome.
Will you come back?
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
I will totally come back.
Thanks, Kathleen.
All right.